With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello and welcome to episode 192 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. And ain't Liz Truss doing well since she came into power? I bet old Boris is laughing his socks off. But anyway, firstly as ever, I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, without whom we wouldn't be able to create this podcast. And unlike the street performers, I'm going to go round with the cap before the actor's finished. Because although this content is free for absolutely everyone, if you like what you hear and you want to support us, you can go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, hit their Linktree drop-down box, and that will direct you to their Patreon page. And from as little as the price of a cup of coffee per month, you can help keep this podcast growing. But as I said, if that's not for you, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. Well, today I'm taking you to meet illustrator Joe Munro. I met Joe in the spring at Roy's Art Fair. I got chatted to him, loved what he does and why he does it, and invited him on here to tell everyone else. You'll hear in this podcast that the sense of community is very much at the heart of what Joe does. Let me just read you something about Joe in his own words. British illustrator Joe Munro has drawn on locations all around the world. His practice stems from reportage principles of illustration, capturing his subjects with layered aesthetic to add depth to the stories he tells. This is another podcast that's been waiting in the wings for some time. It was recorded round about June, but because of other obligations of the Ministry of Arts, we've had to put Joe's and a few other podcasts just to one side while others were released. But it's here now, and that's the main thing. So please, come and join me as I spoke over Zoom to Joe Munro. And have you been busy?
Yes, I've recently, so with my kind of illustration work, I've always balanced that with kind of art direction and graphic design work. Yeah. So I work, I've been working in studios for the last couple of years, but I've kind of, over the last month, I've stopped doing that and kind of purely focusing on my kind of illustration work and pushing that a lot more. So yeah, the last month or so, that's been really exciting. I've been speaking to people about funding grants and some really exciting projects. So,
and what direction are you pushing your illustration in?
So I've been kind of working on quite a small scale, not too small, but like, paper and small canvases. And I've really been looking to kind of move it into much more larger scale pieces, because I think a lot of the subject matter of my work has been through like with local communities, charities, you know, live drawing on site with different groups. And it'd be really nice to find a way to take my illustrations and these experiences that I have and transform them into much larger scale things that can like go back into the community and be on a larger scale. Because I think a lot of the illustration work I do that ends up in, you know, magazines, or it's not always accessible to, you know, the everyday person, and or they might not go to galleries, which are kind of, you know, like elitist places. So they won't actually get to see the final artwork or be inspired by that. So kind of my one of the projects that I'm really excited to be working on is doing some kind of reportage drawing, kind of documenting stories of people in Portsmouth and the local area, and, you know, their struggles through the cost of living crisis at the moment.
Brilliant.
And we're going to work out a way of like putting some murals together around the city to kind of inspire people and like, or just kind of document inspiring people who go unnoticed really, and give them a bit of a voice and a platform to kind of share their story and hopefully bring the community together. Because I feel like in times of crisis, people can feel quite isolated and that they're going through it on their own. So I feel like having a mural that has different sections that can kind of,
That they can all relate to,
they can relate to that. So that's my plan, or one of my plans for a project at the moment.
Super. So for those listening, I'm speaking to Joe Munro, who obviously is an illustrator. We met several months ago at Roy's Art Fair, where you was creating an illustration on a glass fire exit so that people could see it from the outside, and you was just documenting the people that was out in the square, wasn't you?
Yeah, that's something I quite like to do at events like Roy's Art Fair or similar events, is do live drawing, because I find a lot of people are interested in not just seeing these final pieces of shows, but actually giving them an opportunity to see a bit behind the curtain and watch the artist in play and how create things live. And drawing on windows is quite fun, because you're obviously really, people come right up to the drawings, but you're kind of looking back at them within a few inches behind the glass. So,
well, what I found quite fascinating, Joe, was when I went on the outside and I was taking a few photographs of you while you was doing what you do, but it was quite fascinating watching the nib of the pen that you was using on the window. Then you discover what you're drawing as you're discovering it yourself, you know?
Yeah, you can kind of... Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting experience, because you're kind of watching the artist, or watching my brain working, and how I'm kind of figuring out how to draw figures interacting with each other. Or I like to include things like overheard conversations or snippets of text, and how that could interact with the illustration as well. So it's nice to bring all those little elements. It's kind of quite a raw form of my drawing, really, but it suits itself quite well to... those live events. And the kind of overarching theme was like overheard conversations at art fairs.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a bit fun as well. That
nice.
You hear things that people discuss, and it can be quite funny to then project them back out onto a window illustration.
So how did your art journey start, Joe? Did you have art in the home growing up?
I mean, some of my family were like really creative. My older sister was a really good fine artist painter, and she still does that now. So I always kind of looked up to her and all her work. I got on well at school with art classes. Like I had really good teachers there. But the teachers in the other parts of the school weren't so good. So I kind of... And they had a thing at my school, like if you had detentions, you didn't just have to sit there in silence. You could go and do it in a class.
Oh, nice.
So my art teacher was like, well, if you ever get a detention, just come to art. After art.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time just like one-on-one, like doing, you know, clay pots.
Brilliant.
All this stuff. It was like, this is like free, you know, free education, doing these big like murals in, you know, it meant to be like punishment, but.
Yeah, that makes the attention a bit easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'll just, work on my
or even or... even purposely playing up in class so that you get detention for a bit of a extracurricular activity, you know?
Yeah, so I think I've always, you know, like drifted towards kind of creative things, and I still don't know where I'll end up with it, and I kind of float between different projects.
But that's why it's called a journey, isn't it? You don't know what the destination's going to be, do you?
Yeah, but I think that's also quite exciting, and why I kind of like the job that I do, because I get asked to do things, you know, like live drawing at a gallery, or you know, these like weird and wonderful projects that you get invited to do, and it keeps you on your toes. And it's not like when you're doing, you know, studio jobs, it can be quite the same thing, repetitive each time you're doing like similar designs. But I find in a this kind of freelance illustration world, you get, you know, requests to do quite, you know, different things, and that's quite an important part of the job for me, to keep the variety.
Yeah, well, that's the good side of the commercial art, is because you're forever changing your subject, aren't you, you know?
Yeah.
And how did you get directed towards illustration from school?
I did a foundation in art and design. And when I was there, I was doing quite a lot of these, like, I didn't actually know really what it was, but I was doing these kind of like reportage drawings of cityscapes, mainly in and around London. And that kind of led me to actually go and study architecture, because I was just really interested in like being on location, drawing these like people and how they interact with spaces. And was doing these large kind of paintings of that. And after looking around four or five architecture universities, I was like, yeah, I don't think this is, although I'm drawing buildings here, this isn't really what I'm trying to capture.
Yeah,
I'm trying to capture like the essence of it, or the energy of an environment, not necessarily actually build the building itself. And kind of that's what led me to then think about doing illustration, because I kind of was at a university looking at architecture and stumbled across the illustration pathway. And I was like, yeah, that's a bit kind of more what I think.
Brilliant.
I did. So yeah, I ended up saying, I don't want to do 7 years of architecture. Illustration would be way more suited to me. But I was fortunate. I ended up going to Bristol University, University of the West of England. And yeah, I did an illustration course there, which was really good. Some of the lecturers that taught me were specialised in like kind of reportage illustration.
Or, oh, there you go.
On-site illustration. So
the stars were aligned, eh?
Yeah. And my first year project was, I was kind of trying to track where local food came from. And so I was speaking to my local fishmonger. He said, well, unlike like supermarkets, I try and get local fish. And we tracked it down to Weymouth, is where he got all his fish from. So I spent like one of my projects in the first year was going out on boats with local fishermen and like doing live drawing, documenting how they catch the.
I bet they must have thought you was balmy, didn't they?
Oh yeah, people think that anyway. But it was good, and it kind of just loosened me up, because I thought, well, I'm on a boat, it's rocking, like mistakes are going to get made here. It's a real test of like my drawing draftsman ability. But some of the results that came away from it, I really like the aesthetic of the drawings, because it's just, you could feel the energy of the boat and like the conversations people were having, or when they got like snagged on something, or when things go right and things go wrong, you're kind of capturing the warts and all of an environment. And I think that was a side of illustration that I was like really excited about.
Good. Well, it was that,
kind of continued in that way.
It was that sort of community attitude that really stood out when we was having chats at Roy's Art Fair. You're sort of oozing empathy for other people. And, you know, it comes out in your work, and it does emit off of the page, or the window in your case.
Yeah, I feel like as an artist, kind of looking inward at myself, I kind of feel like you have a role, and to whatever you're capturing, you can use that role as a platform to sort of give people a voice who don't often have a voice or usual, like, you know, whatever you include, you can then, you can reach people on subject matters that they don't normally talk about as well.
Yeah, I've definitely
done that before when I did a project about, it was in the run-up to an election, but it was talking about like the higher and higher usage of food banks and what they're actually used for. And that I kind of wanted to invite people through the artwork to kind of learn a bit more about what happens at a food bank. So I don't think people necessarily understand that, or who works at a food bank and who actually ends up coming to a food bank. So it's not always people who are, you know, just desperate for food. It might be people who are in full-time jobs and they're getting paid all right salaries, and they still can't afford to live a normal life, and they're having to use it as well. So I think they can be stigmatized in certain ways. I kind of wanted to shine a light on what they're actually like.
And it's hard to get your head around that sentence that you just used, that there's people, even professionals, going to work and can't afford to fucking feed themselves in this day and age.
Yeah, and it's...
it's bonkers. But the thing is, we hear it so often now, it's just become part of our life, and we don't sort of think about it, or not we don't, but, you know, you just become so fucking... I can't even think of the word. You come become so used to hearing these words. It doesn't have the impact it initially did until you step back and just think about a bloody nurse going to work and having to get pop into the food bank on the way home. It's disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, I think the more you hear it, it gets normalised, and I think people think that these charities, it's their role to kind of fix these problems, but they're almost just putting plasters over like existing problems, you know, in society. And I think it's interesting listening to, like, you know, people, like spokespeople for like the Trussell Trust or Food Share and like big charities like that. And they kind of say that, like, you know, the numbers keep going up and up, and we're having to obviously up their operation, but we're not addressing the problems that are leading to this. It's just they're having to kind of, you know, up their scale of how many people they're having to feed, and it's crazy, really. But yeah, I think, you know, art has a role, and it's kind of a responsibility of an artist definitely to use their work to shine a light on stories like that. So that's what I try to do.
Well, you have a lot of emotion in your work, and you put a lot of emotion into your work. Which piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I did a piece during the pandemic, and it was kind of quite a loose brief, but it was like, what would you see hope for, like, post-pandemic? So what could you give? How would you give people hope within the city? And for me, there's a like, local festival that happens in the city. And when I used to live in London, I used to always come back for this little festival at home. And it was just kind of a moment in time where, like, friends and family would all meet up at this, like, little festival and get together, have a dance, and just be around each other. And I think pre-pandemic, we all just took those kind of moments for granted a little bit. So I took the song lyrics of Vera Lynn, "We'll Meet Again," and I changed that to "We'll Dance Again."
Nice.
And, it was a little nod to that. And yeah, I kind of used a compilation of loads of different people who, you know, friends and family, or people who posted pictures of, you know, the good times they had had at the festival. And I brought that together into one image. And yeah, it got posted up all around the city. And
oh, nice.
Lots of people really liked the poster, and it kind of resonated with people. And I think at that time, people really needed something like that to show, you know, this pandemic won't go on forever. And it did feel a bit like that at the time. And yeah, I quite liked, you know, the message, and doing it for my local city and the people. And yeah, got a lot of positive feedback on the poster. So
yeah, good. Well, it's hard as an artist to get feedback from the viewer, because we put an image up on the wall and then we walk away from it, and we don't know the feedback unless we get sort of messages on social media or what have you. But it's a beautiful thing when you do hear that it has touched someone or affected someone in some way, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think if you can get that connection with people, with the content that you're trying to put out there, like, that's what kind of draws me to being an artist, really. Obviously, I know there's value in the aesthetic of the drawing as well, and that also takes a lot of time to get that right and, you know, capture the energy. But if the content can really connect with people and, like, in a good way and make them feel better, then that is definitely a bonus, and I'm doing my job. But I still get people today, even though that was a job I did a few years ago, and they'll go, "Oh, I know you. You're the bloke who did the poster."
Brilliant.
So, yeah, it still sticks in their mind, I think, which is nice. It can be so powerful, and it's not just like, yeah, an image, but if it can transport people, like, in their own way to, like, you know, connect them to, like, someone they loved, or, you know, can form those, like, reignite those connections, then it just has so much power.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And that's, like, so good. As an artist, you're doing your job.
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Yeah.
Jeff, there was you and five other creatives, past and present. What would your ideal group show be?
Oh, that's a good question. I really like Ai Weiwei, the Chinese artist. Whenever I've been to his exhibitions, I just really felt, you know, it has such strong concepts behind his work, and aesthetics of, like, his sculpture, and he just kind of dives off into so many different directions with what he's doing. But yeah, it's always just got such a powerful idea that I just, yeah, to share a stage with someone like that would be insane. So yeah, definitely him. Grayson Perry would definitely be an artist. So
blinded.
He's kind of like an artist's artist, I think. I think everyone kind of looks up to him for the work he's done, and yeah, he's so kind of knowledgeable of, like, the art scene, but not in a pretentious way. He kind of says it how it is, and I think his work, like, comes out in his work. And, like, some of the big tapestry pieces he's done, like, especially in the UK, I think they're, like, incredible.
And they are good, aren't they?
About society and culture and, you know, taste. He did a series of reef lectures, and they always stick in my mind. And whenever I'm walking around galleries, and he said something like, "If you saw the work in a skip, would you take it out of the skip?" And I always think that looking at a piece, like, if I walked past that and that was in a skip, would I take it out?
The first time I ever saw Grayson Perry's work, I didn't know Grayson Perry. I saw his work first, and it was owned by Saatchi. And at the time, Saatchi was renting the GLC building on the Thames there. So we was in this old, like, it looked like a 1920s building, you know, like oak panels and that sort of thing. Mm. And I was walking down this corridor, and there was all these artworks, ceramics on pedestals. And I saw his one, like, you know, a few sculptures away. And I thought, oh, that looks good. And I'd never seen anything like that.
Mm.
Yeah, it fucking blew me away, that. His work, they're a great way to discover an artist, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, he's also kind of moved in lots of different directions with his practice, and it's always interesting to see what he comes up with.
Sorry to hijack your list there a moment.
It's all right.
So that's two.
Who else? I think Ralph Steadman's probably got to be in there.
Nice.
Because I think yeah, he's always been a reference point for me in terms of like the way him and Hunter S. Thompson and journalism, and that really influenced me. And I was excited by the work he did. And just in my work, I always try to capture the energy of the environment that I'm in. And I think he just does that on another scale in his cartoons. And it kind of comes from like a foundation of reportage drawing. But the way he's just got this like exaggerated like mark making that really makes you feel like things are moving across the page.
Brilliant.
I think it's amazing. And he's kind of bonkers, really. I think it's all the drugs, but his work's amazing. And yeah, I always, you know, reference his work. I've got one of his pieces up behind, actually, one of the Dr. Gonzo piece. But
yeah, nice.
So yeah, definitely want to share a stage with him. Who else would I like? There's an artist called George Gross, who...
the name doesn't ring a bell. What's his work?
He did a lot of like documentation in Germany of the like Weimar Republic.
Okay.
And kind of the different structures within the class system in Germany. Yeah, he did these like huge, like kind of a bit like cubist kind of paintings.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated by his work, and I've got a load of his books and drawings, and I always look back at his kind of sketchbook work and how he tries to talk about how, you know, the greedy businessmen like post-war were like taken from like different people in society. Yeah, just this kind of class war that comes out in the paintings, I think. Yeah, really interesting artist. How many more have I got?
One.
One more.
You can have as many as you like, mate.
I think Anthony Gormley, probably.
Yeah, perfect.
I'm just thinking about exhibitions I've been to that really kind of just like engaged me so much with their work. And I feel with him, you could just see from like this little A6 sketchbook on his mind, just like looking at, you know, the human form and the figure, how he could like translate, you know, these emotions people felt on such grand scale. And it's just nice to go on that kind of journey with him, seeing how he like evolved these tiny little drawings into like these maquettes, and then that being, you know, 100-foot tall stone sculptures that your Angel of the North, or, you know,
pretty cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they're amazing. You know, how it's kind of weird, it's kind of like quite distracting when you're driving along the motorway, you've got this like
sculpture. I've never driven past it.
No, it's really cool. But I've seen quite a few of his like sculptures out in the wild, and yeah, they've always like fascinated me. Just to see that transition from a little sketch you might do and how it, where it could potentially end up.
Yeah.
Was so like ambitious.
There's such a void between the sketch and the finished piece, isn't there? You feel like there should be three or four stages in between.
Yeah, I just quite like artists who are brave enough in an exhibition to not shy away from their, you know, sketchbook and show off like warts and all of how they go on their journey to get from, you know, A to B, and they show the maquettes that might look a bit rough around the edges or made out of, you know, cheap materials, and they don't care about that. And I think he definitely did that in the Royal Academy show. And
I agree. Are there any standout collaborations or commissions that you've had?
Yeah, so I've done a project recently which has been going on for a couple of years, really, but I've found it really interesting. It's working with a guy called James Sharp, and he's a filmmaker, documentary filmmaker, and we were working with a record company called Captured Tracks in America, and we were making a film, or he was making a film, about a guy called Martin Newell, who had been in a band called The Cleaners from Venus. And he kind of didn't want the limelight in his life and just kind of made these tracks in his home, but had become kind of famous around the world for all these tracks that he'd made. And he had a really interesting story, and he was a really kind of quirky guy. And yeah, I was, you know, brought on board to the project to make these kind of animated and illustrated sections within the project. And I just found it really interesting to, you know, use all these different things like interviews and old like film footage and ephemera and try and bring that into these like animated shorts that are ended up being in the film. And yeah, James was a great guy, and I really felt like it was a new direction for me to kind of push my illustrations and how they could be used. And they kind of lended them quite well to this kind of work, and where it's like, you know, very quick illustrations and text that kind of overlaid over each other. You know, with little bits of spot color to highlight, you know, different
things. Yeah, nice.
Telling these wacky stories. So, yeah, that was a really interesting project to work on. Yeah, I was going to say about working with my friend, so Mr. Doodle.
Yeah.
He's done like quite a few projects throughout the years, and that's always been like a fun project to work on.
But you've worked on a few with him.
Yeah, so when I was at uni, I was at uni with Sam.
Yeah. And
we, you know, always spoke to each other and helped each other out on projects with him. So we've always been, you know, good friends, and we, you know, were speaking yesterday about different projects. But like whenever we like hang out with each other, we always try and like do a like collaboration of some.
Yeah.
So I'd just been to one of the collaborations we did was of Times Square. And we've been speaking about meeting up. And when I got back from New York, I was thinking, it'd be really interesting to see how his kind of like digital art, or, you know, graphic art,
yeah,
kind of would merge with my style of like an environment. And I kind of was in New York. I thought somewhere like Times Square is kind of perfect because it is this merge of life and digital. And
yeah,
it was a bit, you know, like you're in the metaverse. So I quite liked the idea of doing this Times Square mural panoramic. And yeah, so I bought the biggest canvas I could, and yeah, took it down to Sam's studio in Kent, and yeah, we did a big mural of that. But that was a couple of years ago. More recently, like post-pandemic, we did another piece which was kind of based on a similar idea, but we did some of our favorite places around London. So we did Camden, Borough Market, and we do Piccadilly Circus, and we did a tube train piece as well. But yeah, we kind of just like really felt that it works, like our illustrations come together in this way.
Yeah.
And it pushes us in both a new direction and the challenge of like how, you know, you're going to have this bit of space, I'll have this bit of space, or kind of how we're going to balance things to make them work. So,
well, it's funny because you very probably, I presume, use a fine liner quite often. He uses paint pens, which the nib is possibly 20, 30 millimetres wide. And yeah, pulling them two together is quite a thing on its own, isn't it?
Yeah, so we kind of had to agree on like the aesthetics of the pen, or pen choices. And I kind of tried to get him to, on when I've been working, I try to use like, yeah, thicker pens when you're trying to bring out the foreground, and then like smaller nibs so you get that depth. So he did like mix up a bit, which I felt really helped, because you've got these really like bold graphics, like,
yeah,
and then you kind of have this depth and all these kind of smaller adverts as it drops back. And yeah, it's nice to have those little spots of color and picking out yeah, different like interesting things. Or I'd do a drawing of a person, then he, you know, give him like a doodle jacket, and it just make the illustration really pop. So yeah, I think it worked out quite nicely.
And Mr. Doodle has had quite a very rapid rise within the art world and social media world, hasn't he? And how long would you say it's gone? Because he's got something like 1.2, 1.5 million followers on Instagram, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think it's even more than that. I think it's
like, and how long has it taken him to come to that amount?
I think it's not very long, really. Probably
it's amazing, isn't it?
Under 10 years. But I think he was like, when I first met Sam, like he was just a very unique guy in terms of, you know, the speed at which he could create work. And he was very set on, you know, what he wanted to do. And we discuss ideas. And I'd say this to, I teach at the university, some illustration courses, but I always reference it that you have a chat with Sam about an idea, you'd come back the next day and he's done it.
Brilliant.
Like, yeah, I've gone and done it. What should I do next? It's like, whereas some students, you know, spend 2 or 3 weeks thinking about, oh, should I do this or that? Sam was very direct, you know, you'd be like, oh, you could do like, you know, projections onto buildings and maybe do some like illustrations like this. And you'd be like, come back the next day, like, yeah, so I've got the projector. Yeah. Last night at 3 a.m., what do you think? And you're like, I just think that kind of energy and speed. There's a lot of like factors to why he's been successful as he is, but I just think that, you know, speed and like dedication, and you won't ever meet a person who's more dedicated and has devoted so much time to their art career than Sam. So,
and he comes across as a very nice guy as well, on top of all that.
Yeah, really nice guy. And we've always remained good friends, and it's a pleasure to do pieces with him. So he's a very busy guy. So yeah, it's been really nice to do projects like that. And
well, if you wasn't an artist, Joe, what would you like to be?
I think I'd love to be in a band, really. I think I'm a failed musician.
And what type of music would be your music of choice?
I saw Guns N' Roses last weekend, and to be in a band like that, I think when I was growing up, trying to play guitar and be a front man, I think, rock and roll band, probably.
Nice.
So something like that would be my dream job, but I don't think.
So you could see yourself on the pyramid at Glastonbury.
God, I think I would like to have thought so.
You could at least do a backdrop. You can meet yourself halfway.
Yeah, I'll do a pyramid takeover at some point. That's got to be second best.
Right, Joe, have you got anything coming up in the pipeline?
So I've got a project coming up in Portsmouth. They're building a undercover skate park.
Oh, nice.
And I'm currently planning like a really large scale mural in the skate park. And it's going to kind of be about, you know, people in the city. It's a crowdfunded campaign, so it's going to reference like the contributions of people that made to make the project happen. But yeah, it's an enormous project and really ambitious, and the guys running it are great. So it's called the Undercover Skate Park Project, but doing a large scale mural for those guys. And it's kind of in tandem with the other mural projects that I've got going on in the city. So I think, the main things that people should look out for is kind of just more my large scale mural. And if you see anything about to like, let me know. But I think these are just a few projects that I've got going. And I think by August, September time, there'll probably be more things going on in a similar fashion. So
we had an artist on here a while ago called My Dog Size, who'd done a big exhibition in Portsmouth. Did you go to that at all? It was is it an old casino or something?
Yeah, My Dog Size has been kind of really big name in Portsmouth for his, lots of different projects, but his mural work, and you see it all over the city, really.
And another damn nice guy.
Yeah, really nice guy. It's good to see like creatives doing stuff in the city. I think it's a really brave thing to do, to take on a project like that and get it funded, and it's amazing like the support you can get when you've got an idea and you're trying to realize it. But you've got to be brave to do it, and it's not an easy feat at all. So
From speaking to him, it was a lot of hard work, a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And Joe, where can anyone find you, be it website or social media?
So best place is just to probably go on my website, which is just my name, which is joemunro.com, joemunro.com. And then my Instagram handle is just joe_mun.
Perfect.
Grab me there.
Right, Joe, that's all my questions asked. Thank you very much for your time, and it's very much appreciated.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for having me. It's nice to catch up with you since seeing you at Roy's Fair. And it was a pleasure talking to you then, and pleasure talking to you now. So.
See you later, mate. All the best. All
right, take it easy, mate. Ciao.
Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. So we wasn't dictated to by advertisers
we decided from the offset to go ad-free, which means obviously we had to self-fund. So we set up the Ministry of Arts Patreon page. And without that support, we would not be able to produce this podcast. So if you like what you hear and you're able to support the podcast, just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll find a Linktree drop-down box, which will direct you straight to our Patreon page. And for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help keep us growing week by week. But if you're not able to do that, that's fine, because this content is free for everyone. But leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to your podcast, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. Or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Everything is appreciated. But either way, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.